the following five items. These are the items that you can use if you want to fulfill matzah. So in other words, matzah doesn't just come out of a box. Someone has to bake it. What is matzah? Well, it's one of the five things. Chitim, Sa'orim, Kusmin, Shifon, Shibolet, Shu'al. Those are your five. What are Chitim, Sa'orim, Kusmin, Shifon, and Shibolet, Shu'al? What exactly do these mean? And that's what I didn't translate there because it's actually not so clear cut. The five with which we usually identify them are known as the five grains. All of them come from related grass tribes, Triticiae or Triticiae, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, my Latin ain't great, and Avinei is the other one, but they're all part of a subfamily of grasses. Chita is wheat, triticum. Sa'ora is barley. Hortium vulgare is the Latin name, also a grass. Shifon is usually rendered as rye, which is actually a wheat species. Kusmin is rendered as spelt, or triticum spelta, also a species of wheat. And shibolet shu'al is generally rendered as oats. Avena sativa, which is another grass. We're going to come back to that identification of oats because that matters a great deal. But those are the five that we usually use. So the list of five is wheat, barley, rye, oats, and spelt. That's the traditional understanding. How did we come to that? How did we come to the idea that these should be the five species? It matters a great deal because we've said that these are the species you can use for matzah. Anyone here in a position of having to research gluten-free matzah? Anyone ever research that?
I've bought it.
Okay, so the standard gluten-free matzah is oat matzah, correct? That's what people use, because oats, in fact, are either non-gluten or low enough gluten that it doesn't arouse the sensitivities that people have. And so people use oat matzah. Well, I need to know whether oats are actually a grain to know whether oat matzah is actually matzah. That's a very important question. And in fact, there's a machlokas, there's a debate among the botanists as to whether oats count as one of the five. Which of the five would it be? It would be shibolet shu'al. If you take a look at source number, I'm jumping over source number two right now because we don't need it at the moment. But if you take a look at source number four, Rashi to the Gemara in Psachim says shibolet shu'al is avina. In his language, in the French of the 11th century, avina, and he says its stalk is like the tail of a fox, hence the name shibolet shu'al. Shibolet is stalk, shu'al is fox. So its stalk is like that of a fox. Rashi says avina we understand to be oats. Well, several decades ago, along came the botanist Yehuda Felix. And Yehuda Felix argued that shibolet shu'al cannot be oats for three reasons. Number one, he said, look at the Mishnah at the beginning of Kilayim. Kilayim deals with mixed species. Not allowed to graft together, not allowed to plant too close together. And if you take a look there, it identifies species which it says are not Kilayim to each other, meaning they're considered to be the same species. And lo and behold, the list begins, Sa'orim, barley, and Shibolet Shu'al, as well as Kusmin and Shifon, Polen, Safir. These are not Kilayim to each other, meaning they are considered identical. Sa'orim and Shibolet Shu'al, for the purposes of Kilayim, are considered the same. Barley, we identify Sa'orim as barley, and Shibolet Shu'al are the same. Well, if you ever looked at barley and oats as a plant, you will see they're actually pretty different. Here I have the end product for you, which is not really that clear, because all the five grains pretty much look the same. But later on, I'm going to pass them around. This is the barley bag. This is the oat bag. I don't just know it because I labeled it. I actually have looked at these pretty carefully. And the barley and oats, as a plant, actually look, as a product, look fairly different. But certainly when you look at the plant, they are very different. And so Yehuda Felix argued, oats can't be shibolet shu'al. Not if shibolet shu'al is identical to barley. Are we clear on that? I'm rushing a little bit because of the constraints of time. But do we understand that point? He's saying that the Mishnah Kilayim tells us that shibolet shu'al is identical with barley. Oats are not identical with barley. That's his argument number one. Argument number two comes from the Talmud Yerushalmi in source number six. The Yerushalmi says in Chala that Shura is actually a word used in a pasuk in Yeshaya. It's Yeshaya 28:25 for those who want to look it up. That word, Shura, refers to Shibolet Shu'al. Why is it called Shura? The Yerushalmi wants to know. Because it is formed like a Shura. What's a Shura?
Straight line.
A straight line, a row. Well, Felix argued, oats don't look like that. If you don't have any oats handy or any oat plants handy, I recommend that you go online to Wikipedia because they can show you a picture of oats. We could have made this sheet like a whole picture sort of sheet to show you what different things look like. But no, oats don't look like that. Further, Felix argued, oats were not domesticated in Israel in the time of the Mishnah and Gemara. And therefore, it's unlikely that Shibboleth Shual would refer to oats. Further, he argued, not everyone among the Rishonim said that it's oats. The Meiri, writing on Challah, as well as the Aruch, who's actually a little bit before Rashi, said it's a type of rye, not oats at all. There's a commentary discovered in Yemen that argues that it's a kind of barley. So Yehuda Felix argued that actually Shibboleth Shual is not oats at all. Interesting. The response to Felix is, hey, we have a tradition that Shibboleth Shual is oats. And it goes all the way back to Rashi, which is a pretty long time. Granted, it's not as old as the Gemara, but it's a good 900 years that Jews have been saying Shibboleth Shual was oats. Rabbeinu Gershom, who was before Rashi, believes it. The Maharil, who was after Rashi and who is the granddaddy of Ashkenazi Minhagim, says, you better believe Shibboleth Shual is oats. How dare you decide, coming along at the end of the 20th century, and tell me that Shibboleth Shual is not oats. The Rabbeinu Yosef Efrati, writing in the OU's journal, Masora, presented source number 7, a comment made by the Chazon Ish. Now, you need a little bit of background on this comment that's in source number 7. The Chazon Ish was asked about newly discovered halachic sources. In the early 20th century, various texts came to light which should affect the way that we make halachic rulings, such as the text of the Meiri's commentary to the Gemara. The Meiri is very old. We're talking 600 years old. And should theoretically have had a voice in the positions which ultimately generated the Shulchan Aruch. However, the manuscript wasn't available. Now the manuscript comes to light. Do I look at the Meiri and say, well, we should now take it into consideration and say, well, the Shulchan Aruch would have ruled differently if he had access to the Meiri. Right? That's what we want to know. And the Chazon Ish said, no. Take a look at source number 7. He wrote, it is known in halachic matters not to depend greatly upon new finds, only on the books of authorities which have been passed through the generations without interruption. So he says, the books we had are the books we use. I don't like new manuscripts. Having said that, so Rabbi Efrati uses that to argue, you shouldn't challenge the definition of Shibboleth Shual as oats. The argument in response is, we're not talking about a new manuscript. What we're talking about is trying to figure out what Shibboleth Shual was 2,000 years ago, based on botanical information, based on a Yerushalmi, based on a Gemara that everybody had access to. It's not about a new Sefer. It's not about something that's come to light now. So his proof from there is not so perfect. He does argue with the definition of Keshura in the Yerushalmi that we brought in source number 6, and points out, very interestingly, that recent discoveries have shown that they had oats in the time of the Mishnah and the Gemara. In 2006, there was an article published in the journal Science about digs that were done at Yericho that supposedly date back millennia, in which they discovered thousands of wild oat and wild barley grains in the digs in Yericho. Sorry? Yeah, it's very interesting. They also found olive pits, which doesn't surprise me at all, knowing Israelis. Yeah, sitting there. What else do you do while you're sitting there in the fortress, right? They, granted that they seem to have been more of an animal food rather than a human food, still, they have oats around, and they're eating oats. Interestingly, some major authorities seem to have been swayed by Felix's arguments. Felix reports, and this is coming from him, but he reports nonetheless that Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach actually changed his bracha on oatmeal to shahakol for a period of 2 years based on the argument that oats really shouldn't be on the list of the five grains and it should really be a bari pri ha'adama and a shahakol once you process it, and therefore he's changed it to shahakol until Rav Eliashiv told him don't change the minhag of centuries on the basis of some botanist. and so he went back to making a Mizonos. It's a very interesting story. Rav Moshe Sternbach, addressing somebody who was gluten intolerant, points out that according to the view of Felix, oat matzah wouldn't be usable. So it's a very interesting debate. I think the majority of halachic authorities, despite Felix's points, say we consider oats to be one of the five grains. I have yet to hear anybody say, like, Pluto has to be dumped from the planet, so do we have to knock out oats from our list of five grains? And we do say, if you're stuck, you know, you go with the oat matzah. But I bring in the oat debate because it's instructive for the quinoa discussion. Because it tells us how it is that we determine what is and what is not a grain. Hang on one second. Just one second. The major criteria are, was this available to the Chachamim in the time of the Mishnah and the Gemara such that I could believe this is what they meant when they listed the five? Do I have a Misora? Do I have a tradition that it is one of the five? And botanically, is it related to one of the five species? Those are the concerns we have regarding oats. And when we ask the question regarding quinoa, is it humming? Is it one of the five? We're going to have to ask the same questions. Yes?
So, you said two different ways, and I just want to get clarity here. You said oats are not to be used. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not. No, I have to clarify. What I'm saying is that classically we defined oats as one of these five species such that you could use it for matzah. And theoretically also it could become chametz. That's the classic status of oats. Felix comes along and challenges that definition based on botany and the question of, well, were oats really available to them at that time or did they mean something else other than oats? Right, and that questions his statement that it wasn't available. The botanical question that he raises is an interesting one. His problem with the Mishnah and Kilayim is an interesting one. The Yerushalmi and Challah that we brought in source number 6 is an interesting point. But in general, his view, his contention is not followed. So that in general, the trend, and again, as I said at the outset, for all halachic matters, ask your rabbi. But the general trend is to say that we rely on oats for matzah, for those who are in need of oats for matzah, and we say, on the opposite end of things, if it becomes wet and it rises, it becomes chametz. And we can more for my name is Onos, and etc. Okay?
Thanks. The
yes. So now let's take it and apply it to quinoa. That was a perfect segue. Thank you. In terms of whether they could have meant quinoa with any of the five that we mentioned here, the answer is no. Quinoa is grown by the Incas in South America until modern times. No one in the time of the Mishnah and the Gemara has it anywhere near the Middle East. So in terms of availability there, clearly not. We have no Misora, no tradition that says that this is one of the five. And further, it's not related to the five species, not botanically and not in appearance. It's just not so. You can look up all the pictures you want. It's an entirely different creature. Those five are grasses. This is a berry. The five all have hollow stems, and they have nodes on the stems from which the leaves arise, and then you eat the seeds. The seeds are included in the fruit kernel. Quinoa is a flowering plant. It's from the amaranth family. It's a species of goosefoot, if you know what goosefoot is. I don't, but I know it's a species of goosefoot. It's not a cereal. It's not a grass. It's actually related, interestingly, to beets, spinach, and tumbleweeds. Theoretically, you can eat quinoa leaves, although there doesn't seem to be much of a market for it yet. Not only that, if you take a look now back at source number 2, I'm not going to do it inside because we have too much else that we have to achieve. The Gemara notes a key difference between the grains and other species. The grains, when they become wet, ferment and rise. Non-grains, the items that are not on the list, rot. The Gemara talks about rice and millet and says that they will rot rather than produce the same fermenting results. So the Star K said, we did tests on quinoa. We ground it up, made it into a flour, added water, and it rotted. It didn't rise. So that's added proof that quinoa should not be considered one of the chametz grains. So in sum...
That was the refinement source.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, no, I didn't bring it on here. So, no.
That's the one you're talking about.
Yeah. Yes. So, to summarize what we have, in terms of the question of whether quinoa is one of the species that can become chametz, it doesn't pass the test. In the oat debate, we cite Misora, We cite whether it was available to them at that time, and we cite botany. And on all three fronts, quinoa fails the test. So you can't tell me that quinoa is going to be chametz. Okay, that's step one. Step two is, might quinoa be prohibited as kidneyos? So we need to know more about kidneyos. The first thing to know about kidneyos is that it's relatively recent in Jewish history. The earliest source that we have is from about 700 years ago. If you take a look at source number 9, I always like to quote this when talking about kidneyos. It's regarding your Seder plate. We have two cooked foods on our Seder plate, right? They tend to be what?
The shank bone and?
And the egg. Right. Why a shank bone and an egg?
The two korbanot.
Right. To represent the two korbanot. That's why we have two cooked foods. We want to represent the korban Pesach and the korban Chagiga. The Chagiga which you ate. The celebration korban that you ate in order to reach almost satiation. And then the korban Pesach that you eat when you're full at the end of the Seder, symbolized, of course, by the Afikoman. Good. Those are our two cooked foods. Do they have to be a shank bone and an egg? Well, no. We do that, and we've been doing it for centuries. But it doesn't have to be so. Take a look at source number 9. Maishnei Tavshilin, the Gemara asks, what are the two foods? Rav Huna said, beets and rice. Which tells you that he ate kidneys. He has beets and rice on his Seder plate. In fact, Rava sought out beets and rice because of Rav Huna's recommendation. And Rav Ashi said, we see from Rav Huna's words that we are not concerned for Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri's position. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, back in source number 2, believed that rice, in fact, could be chametz. So he says, Rav Huna clearly doesn't care, because he's using rice on his Seder plate. I am not recommending that people go with beets and rice. Only pointing it out because it's a very interesting little item there. I would note, though, I had a friend who was a vegetarian who didn't want to have a shank bone on his Seder plate. Leave aside the question of what he's going to do when we build the Beis HaMikdash and he's got a Karban Pesach in front of him. He wasn't comfortable with that, so he told me what he does. He uses a rubber chicken. I said to him, you don't need a rubber chicken. You don't need a rubber chicken. Take beets and, not rice, but carrots. Cook some other thing. You don't need to... Yes, it's true. Our minhag is the shank bone and the egg. And I don't take lightly the idea of changing that. But for someone who finds it so repellent that it's going to ruin their Seder, they can't have a Seder with this there on their plate, it's okay. There are other options. Rubber chicken? No, in no way, shape, or form. And that brings us to source number 10. Thanks for keeping me on the straight and narrow. Source number 10 is Rabbeinu Peretz. There is a sefer called the Smak, Sefer Mitzvos Katan, which is a guide to the mitzvos. There's a commentary on it called the Commentary of Rabbeinu Peretz. These are both from the early end of the 13th century, beginning of the 4th, well, really the end of the 13th century. We'll just call it that. So Rabbeinu Peretz, in his comments on the Sefer HaMitzvos, Sefer Mitzvos Katan, I should say, so Rabbeinu Peretz passed away, I believe, about the year 1300. So it's sometime before that. And there, in his commentary, he mentions kidneyos. And he says, regarding kidneyos, and he gives you a couple of examples in the language of his day, pious, pole, ration, lentil, similar foods, our masters treat them as prohibited and do not eat them on Pesach at all, even though everybody knows they're not chametz. Great authorities treat them as permitted, on the other hand. And my mentor, Rabbeinu Yechiel, ate white beans on Pesach and cited this from great authorities and proved it from the fact that regarding rice, which Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri considered a type of grain as far as fermentation, the Gemara said, we are not concerned for Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri's position. If the Gemara can say, I don't care what Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says, then clearly we don't think that it is chametz. That's his position, and therefore he permitted it. So Rabbeinu Peretz says, I don't know what to do. Our masters treat them as prohibited, but I have great authorities who say they're permitted. What do you do? He says, I have a hard time permitting this. Still, he says, it is very difficult to permit something when the second paragraph in source 10, it is very difficult to permit something which the world has considered prohibited since the days of early sages. It may be assumed that they did not treat it as prohibited because of fermentation itself. It's not that they thought these were chametz. For they did not err in something which school children who have learned halacha know. Everybody knows that this isn't chametz. Rice isn't chametz. It is explicit in Psachim, in that Gemara, that only the five types ferment. Therefore, it appears that we should uphold the minhag and prohibit all kidneys, is his expression here for kidneys, on Pesach. Not because of fermentation, as that would be a mistaken explanation, but as a decree. In other words, what he has said is, they don't do it, The reason they don't do it is not because they think it's chametz, but some other decree. And therefore, all kitnit, by which we generally mean legumes, should be off limits. They had some other reason for prohibiting it. What's the reason for prohibiting it? He now gives us a few choices. Number one, since kitnit is prepared in a pot like grain is, as in porridge, if we would permit kitnit, then it might be confused with grain, and people might permit porridge, as both are made in a pot. You prepare them the same way. I can make rice into a rice cereal. I can make oats into oatmeal. Someone might confuse the two, therefore don't use rice.
Or
sort of a Maris Ayin idea, yes. And in fact, later sources use the term Maris. He doesn't, but later sources throw in Maris Ayin as a phrase for this. Further, he says, a second issue. It is harvested like grain. You take these small kernels and you amass them in large receptacles. That's what you do with these other items, the beans and the rice. He says, we do the same thing with those. Like the five types, as is found in the seventh chapter above Metziah, that kitnit is called de'idgan, or de'midgan is the phrase in Aramaic, that which is harvested like grain. His text says, seventh chapter above Metziah, I don't think that's what he means. I think he actually means nedarim nunheh. I think it's a mistake in the addition. Further, there are places where people normally made bread from them, meaning kitnios, as they do from the five types, so that people who are not learned might confuse them back to this sort of Maris Ayin issue. So he has three items here. One, people make them into porridge. Two, they're harvested in the same way. And three, people make them into bread. That's the earliest written source we have for this idea of refraining from kitnios. Mind you, he says that this was prohibited by our masters, right? So it's a while ago, and he says it's been considered prohibited since the days of early sages, chachamim kadmonim, which means it has to go back some distance before his time.
But we don't know.
He doesn't say, and we don't have any record. We're kind of stuck. There is no reference to it. We do have some clues. The fact that Sephardic communities generally don't have this, not universally, because there are Sephardic communities with versions of kitniot as a practice. However, most Sephardic communities don't have it, so it's not likely that it predates the Ashkenaz-Sephard split. It's likely it does not date back to Gaonic times. So you're talking about maybe 11th, maybe 12th? Not any earlier than that, I would think. Sorry?
Somewhat earlier, because you already have just different communities, even back to the Gaonic,
right,
already spreading out in Europe and in Africa.
Right. Right. It is very surprising, though, that we wouldn't find anything in the Gaonim. We have an extensive literature at this point of Tshuvot from the Gaonim. I would have expected to see something somewhere, if this was really...
It was starting not in the area the Gaonim were writing, because the Gaonim were responsible for it.
Yeah.
You could have people who
in those communities,
areas, who might have already had that custom in those areas going back to the time of the Gaonim.
Right. I hear that. I hear that.
Also, couldn't it be circumstantial as well, that the fact that kidneys is something that was chosen to be included in things that could have been related to different environmental issues at the time, and that it became...
Theoretically possible. Theoretically possible. We'd have to go back to the botanists and ask them what was available where and in season and the like. It's certainly true.
Like crowd and stuff like that.
Also potential, yeah.
What year was the Gator
now? The Gaonic period is roughly 7th to 10th. Roughly 7th to 10th. The Torah thinks this is really funny, this whole idea. Rabbi Yaakov Baal HaTurim, writing in the 14th century, says, Yesh Osrin, some prohibit eating rice and types of kitniot in cooked foods because wheat grains are mixed in. This is what he calls a chumra yesera, an excessive stringency. And people are not accustomed to do this. He says, I don't know what you think you're doing. Don't do it. The Beis Yosef quotes Rabbeinu Yerucham as saying it's minach shtus, that it's a custom of foolishness. Rather strong words for him to use.
That's the Beis Yosef?
No, not himself. He's quoting Rabbeinu Yerucham. Bringing that is, I think, something of a statement, which is why Sfaradim feel very comfortable laughing at Ashkenazim, right? Until they get to Rosh Chodesh Elul and they have to start saying Slichos every single night. So I view it as Sfaradim say Slichos every night of Elul to make up for eating kidneys on Pesach. That would be my idea. So what exactly is included here within this practice? So the Ramah, in one place mentions rice and beans, the various members of the legume family. That's in Tuf Nun Gimel Aleph in the Ramah, for those keeping score. Later on in Tuf Samach Dalet, he mentions mustard seed as well, because it's like kidneys, he says. The Mishnah Berurah throws in kasha. Kasha is buckwheat, but buckwheat is not a wheat. Buckwheat is not a cereal or a grass at all, in fact. And the Mishnah Berurah also mentions what seems to be corn. Now, what in the world is corn doing on our list? Rabbeinu Peretz never saw corn. That we know. Corn is a New World food. So we need to find out more about this corn item in a moment. But first, let's ask the question of why exactly these things are kidneys. There are two ways I could look at this. I could say kidneys is a botanical term. Right? Legumes. So anything that is classified scientifically as a legume is kidneys. That's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is anything which has certain symptoms is included in the practice of avoiding kidneys. If it fits the criteria, not botanically, but in terms of the problems that we've defined.
Or the final product.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The problems that we've defined include the final product, mixture, etc. If you take a look at source 12, I'm not going to do it inside because of the time constraints. Sorry?
C35 now.
If you take a look at source number 12 from the Rambam, the Rambam talks about seeds, different kinds of seeds, and he defines kidneys, you see it as the second item, as seeds that people eat aside from grain. Okay, in other words, some plants have seeds that are edible, some plants have seeds that you plant. The kidneys are plants that have seeds that you eat, other than the grains. The grains were in the first category of tivua. That's a definition of kidneys that's more botanical. However, the Shulchan Aruch permits anise and coriander. Those are seeds that you consume. So the Shulchan Aruch does not seem... I mean, when I say Shulchan Aruch, I mean the Ramah, because the Shulchan Aruch, the Rabbi Yosef Karo, thinks it's all fine. But the Ramah says anise and coriander are fine, even though they should fit the Rambam's definition of kidneys. Those are seeds that people eat. So therefore, we conclude it's not really about the botany. Rather, it's about the reasons for the decree. They have certain symptoms. Products with certain symptoms are included as kidneys. So what are those symptoms? Number one comes from what the Torah pointed out. Products that have wheat grains mixed in with them. They have contamination. That's number one. Number two, if they're processed in a similar way, right? Like we talked about in source number 10. You take all the grains together and you lump them up in this big receptacle. They have similar processing. And then third is product confusion. You bake them into similar things. You make them into the porridge that he mentioned. Those are the three classic symptoms for kidneys. Any one of them, theoretically, could be sufficient to say this is kidneys. So now, do I add items that have those symptoms? If I come across something new, do I then add it to the list? Well, yeah. Sorry, well, that's exactly where we're going. First, though, we have to do corn. Show of hands. Of the people here who have the practice of not eating kidneys, how many include corn as kidneys? Yeah, I mean, it's pretty universal, I think, that those who don't eat kidneys don't eat corn. Well, corn is a New World food. It would have to have been added afterwards. So it appears. The Chasam Sofer quotes the Maharam Lublin as counting corn as kidneys, but actually the term Maharam Lublin was using was kasha. When you look at the term that he uses, actually kasha, not corn. But the Mishnah Berurah talks about what he calls Turkish wheat, which is understood to refer to corn. So that corn gets added to the list. I heard one very interesting explanation for why corn gets added. Did you ever look at an old English translation of the Chumash? Right? You ever see how they translate grain?
Corn.
Corn. Right? Tavua is corn. You know why?
Corn is seeds.
Because in German, the word for grain is corn. So if you look like in a Hertz Chumash, I imagine. But Chumashim like that, the older generation of translations, you will find corn as the translation for tavua. It's grain. So someone once argued with me that that's how corn came to be kidneys, because everyone looked at that and said, grain. In any case,
T40.
Thank you. The fact that corn is the fact that corn is on the list would seem to indicate we do add new items to the list. On the other hand, potato, broadly speaking, people. Well, let me ask the question: how many people of those who have this practice of avoiding kidneys, how many people here avoid potato on Pesach? Survey says. Right? Nobody. You better believe it. Potato, starch, potato, cocoa, potato, everything. The only food in my house that's more popular is either cream cheese or jam. I'm not sure which. But that's it. You have to use potato. We had a big problem when I was in Allentown. We had a kiddush one day of Pesach, and every year they would buy things for it, and inevitably the things that they bought were all potato starch. And you need mizonos, at your kiddush. We have this potato starching, so we had to go out and especially make sure to buy Mizuno's things to make sure we would have that available for the kiddush. But the fact that we don't count potato on the list, even though it's processed in a way that's going to produce the same type of things, tells me we don't add to the list. It's very interesting. Take a look. It's source 13. The Nishmas Adam of Avram Danziger. He wrote, I have heard that in Fjorda, in the year 5531-5532, there was a great famine in Germany, and they established a Beit Din and permitted potatoes. For in Germany, they also prohibit potatoes because people make flour from them.
There was no potatoes in my Pesach in Germany.
That is correct. That's his statement. That's what he says. That's the Chayei Adam's position in his Nishmas Adam. In his Chayei Adam, he writes, in source 14, and so regarding all Jewish customs, when they practice something, even though it was not a formal enactment, no rabbi got up and said, this is the gezerah, but only something that people did on their own, there is a prohibition against violating it from the Nevi'im, the prophets. Do not reject the Torah of your mother. If the Jewish people have the custom of avoiding something, avoid it. That's his statement, and indeed, he would add potatoes to the list. On the other hand, flip to source 15, the Prima Gadim, commentary to the Shulchan Aruch, says, come on. I think we're going to run over. We started a little late. The Prima Gadim says, Masha Korin Erd Apple, what they call potato. It appears that people permit it, for it is not kidney oat, and they are large, and there is not grain mixed in with them. There is no, you're not going to find any grain mixed in with your potatoes. He says, I don't believe that potatoes belong on the list. There's nothing to worry about. It's okay. That's the position of the Prima Gadim. Note that he's not principally opposed to adding to the list. He just says potatoes don't fit. Now, he had never seen potato pasta. But he says, frankly, maybe he did. Maybe not. But he says, he seems to be in favor in general of adding, just that potatoes aren't something that I would add if I was going to add something. There is another school of thought, though, that says we don't add potatoes because we don't add to the decree. Take a look at the argument of the Pri Chadash, story 16, Rechizkia da Silva. He quotes from the Knesset HaGedolah. I'm going to quote this outside of the text. You can feel free to look at it inside. He says, the Knesset HaGedolah wrote about a fascinating decree. They have a practice of frying fish in a pan and coating it with flour to prevent it from sticking. Well, what are you going to use on Pesach? Use matzah meal. So they said you can't use matzah meal. Because a woman once did this, and here we go with the Maris Ayin term, her neighbor saw, thought that she was using real flour, and thought, you're allowed to do that on Pesach. This woman did it. It must be that this is okay. She's the wife of a chaver. A chaver is somebody who we trust for halacha. Someone who has accepted upon himself that he's going to observe all the standards of the community. She did this. Well, it must be okay. And therefore, this woman goes home and fries up fish in flour. So the Knesset HaGedolah says, now we have to prohibit fried fish on Pesach. To which the Pri Chadash... It's not gebracht. Not a sure gebracht. Gebracht is lest there be flour that hasn't been baked properly. His sole point is not that. His point is people will think once you're using matzah meal, they'll think you can use flour because they can't tell the difference visually. So he says, Rechizkia da Silva, writing his Pichadish, says, come on. He says, we don't start adding decrees because someone once made a mistake. He said, he brings you a case from the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. We don't. No. He says, look at the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, where they in fact had such a story, where somebody made a mistake regarding a law. He used the wrong item. He was supposed to use beer, he used wine. And we don't now create new decrees and say that, that the practice is off limits. So his view is, we don't add. The Rabbi Yaakov Emdin added another explanation for why potatoes were not added to the list. He said it's because you need them too much. You can't afford other foods. What are you going to start doing here? You're going to ban everything. So there are three reasons that are offered for why potatoes don't make the list. One reason is because they don't really look like kidneys and they're not mixed in with kidneys. Second reason is because we don't add to the decree. And third is that it's just too necessary. We can't start prohibiting everything on people. Surprise. So and that brings us to Rav Moshe Feinstein's attempt to explain why corn would be in and potatoes would be out. Why corn would be kidneys and potatoes would not. He does point out the dissimilarity, the fact that potatoes don't exactly look like kidneys. But he has a very interesting explanation. He was addressing the issue of peanuts and peanut oil. So Rav Moshe said, and you can see in source 17, I excerpted and translated from his tshuva. He says, people argue that peanuts are made into flour and are planted in fields the way that kidneys are. So first of all, he says, we don't apply kidneys criteria to products that have been permitted already. People have been making potatoes into flour for generations. We're not going to now suddenly decide that we are concerned. Why not? Why would I not apply it to these things? Why wouldn't I expand? So he says there's a difference between a gezerah and a minhag. A gezerah is a decree. A beis din gets up and says, we are issuing a decree for the following reasons, X, Y, and Z is usur. That's the beis din's decree. Well, if their decree should apply to another case, case W, then we're going to prohibit W also. But that's not the same thing as a minhag. When you're dealing with a minhag means the Jewish nation decided, the community, wherever it was, they said, we're going to refrain from eating such and such on Pesach. I don't care what your reasons are for it. You have to observe it, as indeed the Nishmas Adam, Chaye Adam pointed out. You are obligated to observe it because that's the custom. But you don't start expanding it to new things. There's nothing to extrapolate. This is what's off limits in the minhag. Beginning, middle, end. No further discussion necessary. That's Rav Moshe's stance on the way minhag works, and he says, that's what kidneys is. Kidneys is a minhag. Why didn't they make a gezerah? Why didn't they make a decree? He said for two reasons. Number one, because of need. And number two, because, like the Beis Yosef noted, the reasons for this whole thing are a little weak. So he said, I'm not going to... that's why we don't make a gezerah. It's simply a minhag. So if you have a minhag not to use peanuts, then don't use peanuts. If you have a minhag not to use corn because it developed that people didn't use corn, then don't use corn. And if your family has a minhag not to use potatoes, then don't use potatoes. But we're not going to impose it on a community. That's Rav Moshe's position, a similar argument in the Chok Yaakov, and in Ritzvi Pesach, Frank's Mikrai Kodesh. Sorry, he ate peanuts. That's the tradition from his family that he did.
Is that Rav Moshe?
Yes. Members of his family have said that he ate it. So I asked the question. I called the COR, because I know that the COR does say that they are kidneys. And I asked, what the story, I don't know from this year or last year, I know that their publication says that it is. So they, okay. So I asked what the story was, and I got an answer. The COR's explanation is that Rav Moshe Feinstein's position on the difference between minhag and gezerah has not really been embraced. Because if we really were to follow that, if we were to follow his argument, then peanuts wouldn't be kidneys. And yet the practice has spread indeed of including peanuts on the kidneys list. So he says, if peanuts have really spread as kidneys, that's the argument that they make, then it must mean people don't accept this distinction that Rav Moshe made. So that's the argument on the other side. Okay. So to sum up this portion of it, we still have one little portion to go. To sum up this point, we saw the origin of the kidneys decree/custom. We saw the concerns that they had. We saw that potatoes were not added by and large, but corn was added. We saw that potatoes might not have been added because potatoes are unique and they're not kidneys like. They might not have been added because there's a great need for them, and they might not have been added because we don't expand the decree. And Rav Moshe explains a position for why one would not expand it. He says it's a custom rather than a gezerah. That's a nutshell summary, so to speak. The one last point, and it's a major point. What about the concern for contamination? If you look at the major at the positions of the major hashgachos, the COR says that indeed it's kidneos. Okay. The position of the CRC in Chicago is that things might get mixed into the quinoa, and therefore you need a hashgacha that's going to certify that wheat, barley, and all those other things didn't get mixed in, because the plants often process grain on the same equipment that they use to process the quinoa. The position of the OU is not to require a special hashgacha for it. The OU says there's a machlokas whether it's kidneys or not. Even if you're going to eat it, be careful that stuff getting mixed in. And then you have the position of the Star K, and the Star K says it's not kidneys, just be careful about things getting mixed in. So even those who say it's not kidneys say you do have to worry about things that are processed on the same equipment getting mixed in. Because remember, if I have wheat getting mixed in, I have a serious problem. When I cook
a problem.
That's a chametz problem. Right. This is a real issue. Correct. This has nothing to do with kidneys. This is very serious. Further, it's a huge problem. Because you know how you process quinoa? Quinoa has on it a bitter coating called saponin. And the way that you process quinoa is you soak it in water. And not only that, they recommend, 2 minutes, they recommend that in addition to the soaking they do at the plant, you should soak it before you cook it in order to remove this bitter material. Well, you're going to soak it with your wheat kernels in there, right? You know what you're going to end up with? Bona fide chametz. Grade A chametz. So therefore, you have to be very careful, and you need to filter it out even before Pesach. Right? Because... filter out whatever might be in there. If you're going to use it, you have to check it before Pesach to make sure you don't have any grains in there that actually have been exposed to water and have now turned into chametz. I can't own chametz on Pesach.
Isn't that the reason why, until this year, people argued that you should buy packaged quinoa with a hechsher on it as opposed to bulk food quinoa?
So for sure you would want to go with something that's packaged rather than bulk. But even the package isn't necessarily safe. I don't know of any quinoa that's under hashgacha that says we know that there are no grains mixed in. It's possible. I don't know. Okay. I'm not... Yeah? Okay. I want to just do one thing.
It is possible to check it to see if...
It is absolutely 100% possible. You just have to be careful. And that's why I brought my handy samples.
So
let me show you what I have, because I feel bad. Itamar is waiting for to come in and give a shear, so I want to make sure to do this. This bag, I'm going to pass it around that way, contains wheat berries. That's whole wheat kernels. Okay, I'm passing this to you, please. Take a look and pass it around. Yes.
Can you spell from matzah?
Yes. This is barley. Barley should look familiar from cholent and the like. You will notice common denominators in all of these grains. They're oblong. They all have the same basic shape. This is rye, but it's been flattened. That's what I could find. These are oats, but they've been steel cut, which is important. Because when you see what the fragments look like, you realize how easy it is to get confused. Those are oats.
Oat is okay.
I'll tell you what, I have to ask you to ask the rabbi about it. Just because I've reached the end of my time and I feel bad. And this is spelt. These are all from Whole Foods. So you give them the commercial. They charge you for it, so I don't need to give them a commercial. I'm also not making any statement about buying grains in bulk from places without a hechsher. I'm not eating this. And this is quinoa. You can see the very real difference between them. All of the grains are oblong. Quinoa is a tiny little ball. You cannot possibly confuse them. There is no way in the world that you are going to confuse quinoa with one of the grains. The problem you run into is fragments of the grains. When you see the steel-cut oats, those can get mixed in, and it's harder. It's still very doable. This isn't checking for bugs. You know, there's no need for a 1-micron filter. What you need to do is simply be careful. And if you're going to have them, if you're following the view that it's not kidneys, make sure before Pesach, go through it, take a look.
Check.
Oh, that's what you're asking. Something cold and dry, that's all.
Anything that's cold?
Ask your rabbi, but I believe so.
Okay.
Okay? Yeah. Yes.
Do not reject Sarah Sunafa. If quinoa would have existed
and it would have been part of any kind of min that would have been a question anywhere across the planet in the Jewish world.
Yes.
It would have been part of our literature. It would have been included somewhere.
Yes.
Whether it was with Svarn, with Akhtar, with Germans. It's nowhere.
No one contends that it was ever in a Gezerah or a Minhag until the last 10 years. No one contends that we have a standing Minhag.
So then why do we have any position on it whatsoever?
Because the argument of take the COR, for example, their argument is that the reasons for kidneyos apply to quinoa, and they believe that we do expand the Gezerah.
And do we expand the Gezerah from our science point of view also?
From a what, sorry?
From our sign point of view also.
Yeah, that's their argument. So then the question is, what about potato? And I leave that to them to answer. Thank you very much.